Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. Full Service Radio.
I'd like to know what you feel as far as the responsibilities of representing mankind on this trip.
That's relatively difficult to answer. It's a job that we collectively said that was possible and we could do. And of course, the nation itself is backing us. So we just sincerely hope that we measure up to that.
The whole Apollo program was designed to get two Americans to the lunar surface and back again to Earth safely. The enormity of this event is something that only history will be able to judge.
Apollo 11 has very simply been given the mission of carrying men to the moon, landing them there, and bringing them safely back.
And welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only art house cinema. I am your host, Jason Cawley, and I'm joined currently by my co-host, Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Ryan?
Yeah, David got a call.
Of course he did. This is becoming routine, actually. Dave's going to join us here in a second. We'll announce his presence when he arrives. But the opening clip that you heard was from the documentary 2019's Apollo 11. And I'll say right out of the gate, if you have the opportunity wherever you are in the world to go see this on a big screen, especially if you can go see it on a good big screen like an IMAX theater or something like that, do not hesitate to go see this. It will be, if not one of the most recent great cinematic experiences of your life, it may be one of the great cinematic experiences of your life, period. It certainly was one of mine, and I've seen more movies than most people. It is truly that good.
It sounds pretty incredible. You have me pretty convinced.
No, I mean, we'll get to it in a little bit. I was in New York last week, and it was raining in New York the whole time, so I just decided, I was going to try to do about a movie a day. And Apollo 11 was actually on a day where I saw two, and this was the second film of the day, pouring down rain, and I saw it at the East Village, at the East Village Cinema. And this basically is an hour and a half of heart-pounding, tear-jerking, national pride, if you will. But I mean that in the most like sincere and wonderful way, because it is all of this footage is 70 millimeter footage that has been collected from NASA and put together. The entire film takes place from the day of the launch until the day they return.
Wild.
And it is truly awe-inspiring, to say the least.
Would you say that it makes you want to believe that it's all real?
Yeah, it makes me want to believe that it's all real.
Just give me the pitch. Convince me.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, it really is like it just every piece of this stuff. They had cameras, and I wasn't aware of this. They had film cameras inside the lunar module and inside the spacecraft as well. So they have footage from them on their journey to and from and landing on the moon that they shot, not just the stills that we're all kind of familiar with. Jeez. But they have actual, 16 millimeter footage, I think it is, in those cases. But it's just breathtaking all the way through. I mean, I think, and I've, I get emotionally wrapped up in cinema. I dive in hard. So, I mean, I'll cry at a movie. It doesn't bother me. But I think I cried like 5 times during this movie. And the first 2 times, I didn't even realize I was crying. Like, just felt my face and was like, oh, my God, I'm bawling.
You know, the only 2 other people I've heard tell me to watch it tell me the same thing, that they cry several times during the movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's just overpowering. And it's one of those things, like, it's the most... You know everything that happens. You know they make it, and they make it back, and everything's fine, and you still can't help just, like, the heart racing nonstop.
Is it better than First Man?
Well, yeah. I mean, I like First Man.
First Man's good.
No, I like First Man, and I The Right Stuff's one of my favorite books. It's one of my favorite movies. I'm, you know, fascinated by that whole, like, early crew of NASA astronauts and the Chuck Yeager breaking the sound barrier and, like, and just in the film, like, Sam Shepard playing Chuck Yeager is, like, the coolest thing, one of the coolest things that has ever happened on film. But this is just it's such a unique experience because it's not like anything. It's all footage, at least for me. I know you'll talk about this in a second, but for me, it was footage I'd never seen before in any capacity. And it's in 70mm, which is just, you know, glorious on the screen. And it's so well cut together. One of the really cool points, I was doing some reading about it after I saw it, because I just kind of couldn't get enough of how they put this thing together. But the music, go for the music alone, Jack.
I'm sold.
Yeah, no, and the cool thing was, like, I was reading about, because I was so intrigued by the music. It's so good, and you can kind of hear it in the trailer a little bit, but they only used primarily electronic equipment, so it's like this electronic soundscape, but they also only used equipment that was made 1969 or earlier. So just, like, this level of authenticity to the whole thing is truly amazing.
Do you think you need to see this in IMAX?
I would love, I mean, I didn't see it in IMAX. I had one of the greatest, you know, experiences I've ever had at a movie, or in a cinema. And I am, Ryan and I are now trying to, like, figure out how we can go see it this week at IMAX.
Yeah. It's playing down at Air and Space Museum.
Yeah.
Which
you're lucky enough
but
to
only
live in D.C.
during the daytime, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a 2 p.m. show.
And there's
show,
one in Silver Spring I'm seeing. There's IMAX showings.
What?
At IFC?
No, no, that's standard. Wow. Huh, interesting. Yeah.
If it's at IFC, it might be on that huge screen, though. It would be beautiful.
No, it's at the Regal, actually, right around
really?
From the
AFI.
Okay. Yeah, weird.
Wow.
Yeah, but the only IMAX showings are at the Lockheed Martin IMAX Theater and the Airbus. Yeah, and they're all daytime. Very interesting.
I mean,
2 p.m. Wow.
Weird. But, I mean, see it on any kind of big screen if you can see it. I mean, the theaters are so good these days, obviously. You know, the THX surround sounds and all that. You just want to see it on as big a screen as possible, obviously. If you can do an IMAX, do that.
Like iPhone 10 or the new Pixel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like on a bus ride.
Your new MacBook. But you actually mentioned something I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, I wish David was here. So the first movie, our first launch of a movie at Sun's, we did Moonwalk 1, which I think was shot by a New York Times photographer at the time. Here,
I'm looking it up.
It sounds really similar. When I first heard about this, it sounded like Moonwalk 1. And then I looked up Apollo 11. I did read an article that says the movie got made in large part because there's this movie, Moonwalk 1. I think now they have all this new footage and 70mm stuff. But Moonwalk 1 is a feature-length documentary film.
1971, too. Like, it was right on the heels of all of it happening, so it's pretty cool.
And I think it only came out in France, but it's about Apollo 11, which landed the first humans on the moon. Besides portraying the massive technological achievement of that event, the film places it in some historical context and tries to capture the mood and the feel of the people on Earth when man first walked on another world.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, the obvious things in the film, and I know I'm just kind of gushing over this because I just can't recommend it enough. Mm-hmm. But, like, the things you expect to be amazing, like the actual launch and all of that footage and watching them, like, hurl into space. And obviously the moonwalk itself and all of those things are, like, of course they're amazing, but the control room is its own unique universe in this movie, and it's its own character and all the characters in there. You know, like, you just don't think about the things, like, they had, like, the team names were like red, green, blue, black team, you know, because they would do 12-hour shifts and swap out. So, and then they all had like everybody. Then we're talking a couple hundred people in the control room. So you're talking like 800 people who are on the ground making sure this shit's happening. And the we don't lose these three guys.
Yeah.
And but I mean, like they're coming on board, like swapping shifts, and you're like watching them come on board, and like, all right, green team is out, red team is in place. How you doing, guys? And the, you just start talking back and forth, and it's incredibly funny at times. Like they, sure. you can't, you know, the seriousness, the gravity of all of that, like has to be broken by some, you know. I guess a sense of humor about it all in a grand scheme of things too. And they do a great job of just kind of showing, you know, Buzz Aldrin's a pretty funny guy, you know, and they're just like joking around over the radio as they're flying to the freaking moon. You know,
does it like do a lot of, crowd work or, you know, focus on the crowds at Cape Canaveral?
It totally does. Oh, it's so awesome.
That's
like,
fascinating.
It's
too.
So great to like, you see all of these old Super 8 cameras, like everybody had a camera or binoculars or, you know, still cameras. And if you're just any kind of a junkie for that kind of technology, like the old existing technology, it's so much fun. And just like watching people like sleeping on the beach the morning of and like getting up and doing their routines and like, you know, I mean, just the whole aspect of everything is well covered. It never feels like it's lagging on anything too much. This should be nominated for, you know, a best documentary easily, but it should probably get a nomination for best editing because it's just, yeah, they had all this great footage, but I mean, to make that, it could have easily been like a 3-hour epic thing that probably still would have been awesome. But the fact that they put this together in like 93 minutes and you feel, I mean, it was one of those things like reading like the best book you've ever read where you're 10 pages out from finishing it. And you just wish you could start all over again.
Yeah.
The minute the credits roll on this thing, you're just like, oh, just start it over. I'll set it in. Yeah. You know, it was like, I think I felt that way. I saw Pulp Fiction in the theater, you know, like the first time I was like, oh yeah, just replay this. I'll buy another ticket. I want to catch all the things I missed the first time. And there's a lot of that. And that's why like a repeat viewing will be fine, you know?
Oh, and it sounds like such an experience that just,
you just want to relive it, you know,
you're going to get addicted.
Yeah.
Starts.
So that was part of, that was probably, I guess, and I saw some cool stuff, but that was
the highlight.
Yeah, it really was. I was expecting it to be good. I was expecting it to be like, oh, wow, that's beautiful. But I didn't expect that it would have such an emotional impact on me from the point of just, you know, absorbing a movie. But yeah, it was part of my larger weekend.
Yeah, give us
around.
A little bit about the New York weekend.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll put it in context a little bit. We live here in D.C., obviously. You know, you have the Sun Cinema, and so we've got this amazing art house cinema we're able to show and kind of put classic films out there and maybe some more offbeat stuff that people can't find. There's only two cities though that you can really go do that, and they're New York and LA. I mean, the New Beverly in Los Angeles to me is like the greatest cinema. Like it's what every art house cinema should aspire to be.
I mean, there's so many good ones.
And there is so many good ones.
You have the New Art, or used to have Cine Family
anymore,
but still the Vista. I mean, there's all these great spots out there.
But for New York, you've got, I mean, I'm not even talking about Brooklyn, which has a handful like Nighthawk and BAM, BAM Rose in Brooklyn, which are amazing theaters that show some retro stuff. But you got places like Film Forum in the West Village.
The best.
And I know you're super familiar. Where I kind of started my week off was there, and I literally just walked up and was like, I'm just going to see whatever's playing. And there happened to be this 1950 film called Mr. 880 from 1950, starring Burt Lancaster. Turned out to be like a crazy enjoyable film.
Great.
It's all about Burt Lancaster plays a Secret Service agent who is trying to track down a counterfeiter, which I didn't even realize was like part of the Secret Service's, you know.
It's a DC movie. You went to New York to watch a DC movie.
Well, it actually takes place in New York. He gets kind of, you know, reassigned to New York, but there is some really cool like old B-roll, 1950 B-roll from around DC, and then the New York stuff, you know, so a lot of it's studio, but there are some like New York scenes that are pretty great that they shot on location, which was pretty rare for 1950 kind of classic Hollywood movie. But, you know, you walk into Film Forum and, you know, it's like coming soon, Harold and Maude, coming soon, I Am Cuba, coming soon. You know, it's just like, oh, my God, to have this place like at your disposal all the time.
Yeah, it's a good
one. And it really is a great one. And then you like walk from the West Village to the East Village and you end up at the East Village Cinema, which, you know, on the billboard, I think I sent you guys a shot, but it's like all of April is like Kubrick. They're showing on the big screen, you know, 2001.
That's Space the guy Odyssey, who did who did AI, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Kubrick.
Or
ET, I forget.
You know, so they're doing like all of this retrospective stuff nonstop, and then you've got IFC kind of right between the two of them.
Also, kind of West Village,
which is nonstop. And I happen to catch, I think, for the three of us, like all three of us, one of our favorite films, Pierre Le Feu, Godard's 1965 masterpiece.
Heard of it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, like we were debating, and it was an amazing print. Like it was a 35 millimeter print, just beautiful. The colors, of course, and that the primary colors he uses in the film like came across so gorgeously on screen. And I think like that was 1965. So he, you know, Breathless is 1960, kind of launches.
Or 59 or something.
59, 60, depending on who you're talking to. And kind of times out perfectly with 400 Blows. So like these two movies come in and the French New Wave begins essentially, you know, in earnest. You could argue Agnes Varda and some other things like predate that a little bit, but some of the documentaries she was doing. But like in earnest, what we know is the French New Wave kind of happened in 59, 60. And only 5 years later, he makes Pierre Le Feu, and that's his 10th film in five years, you know.
He was pretty busy early on.
Yeah.
And I guess still is.
And this is kind of this really like cinema nerd out, but if you're listening to this, you probably are in, at least a little bit in this camp. But what would you say? Do you have a preference to Breathless, Band of Outsiders, this? Where do you fall, Dave?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, Breathless is one of my least favorite.
What?
Really? I liked it when I saw it because it was the beginning of a rabbit hole for me. Mm-hmm. I saw that saw Loves of a Blonde by Milos Forman.
Yeah,
and
right.
That made me like think, oh, there's like a whole other world of movies out there that I have no clue about.
For sure.
So I appreciate Breathless for that. Mm-hmm. Band of Outsiders.
So good.
Yeah. Band of Outsiders, Pierre Le Feu.
Alphaville.
I saw Alphaville at E Street. I saw Band of Outsiders in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen Pierre Le Feu on the big screen. That's probably the one to see.
I've seen it twice now. Colors. And this was a much better print this time.
Man, it's hard. I kind of put them all in the same. And Masculine Feminine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like he just did in the like a 5-6 year span, 10 movies, they all rock.
There's also, there's not just, not A Woman is a Woman, but A Married Woman. Like it's an earlier black and white one that like Janis restored in the last couple of years or whatever.
When is Petite Soldat? When did you do that one?
That one's early.
That's early. That's early. 63, I think.
Yeah, well, he and waterboarding in these early movies.
Yeah.
But but that one's heavy too and great.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's kind of like up to that point, and then...
Well, that's why I said this to me, like, this was his last great film of the early kind of run.
Yeah.
Then it all gets real Maoist and
he
political.
He got super radical. Yeah. And him and Truffaut started not being friends.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, he called Truffaut a sellout for making, you know, Wes Anderson-y movies, basically.
I love
both of them. So.
I love beef between...
But
I do love Godard's
French beef.
Super political stuff, and I am as much as I like the politics, I do prefer the earlier movies.
Yeah,
and Pierre Le Feu, having watched it recently, not on a big screen, it's one I got more out of it in a linear way.
Right,
and it's just a masterpiece of absurdist philosophy. I mean, he's unpacking a lot.
He's, I mean, we were
in a
kind
fun
of,
way.
Yeah, I mean, and you can kind of talk about this forever, but like, you know, it is like philosophy, and I think, you know, heavily influenced, you know, just a plethora of filmmakers behind him, being able to kind of just throw in, you know, your own kind of auteur thoughts and philosophy and, mm-hmm. and have those discussions and, you know, contemporary society, culture, and all these things like rolled into art, you know, bigger conversations uh-huh. that have nothing to do with plot, have nothing to do with,
yeah.
you know, character development necessarily. And it's still just like totally engaging in your life. But it, yep. it what he does do well, and I think maybe doesn't get enough credit for in his writing, is the fact that like that writing still like marries perfectly to the overall theme of what he's trying to say. So you get a coherent picture by the end.
Definitely.
You know?
Because I was just going to ask, like, I wonder if he kind of broke cinema when he made it. Like, look, you could just be absurdist and explore ideas. But the thing is, and I think we should go to your clip, he does have more of a narrative than I thought before when I've seen it.
Yeah, he recently. Just manages to sum it up in about a minute and 10 seconds. If you want to play the clip, Jack, from 1965. Oh, you'll see.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
What did he say?
You were loved. Je suis un Américain, il parle pas français.
Oui, il s'appelle. Qu'est-ce qu'il fait?
Who are you? What are you doing?
I'm an American film director. My name is Samuel Fuller. I'm here to make a picture in Paris called Flowers of Evil.
C'est Monsieur Samuel Fuller. C'est un Américain, c'est un producteur de cinéma. Il est là pour faire les fleurs du mal.
Baudelaire, c'est bien. J'ai toujours voulu savoir ce que c'était exactement que le cinéma.
He says he wants to know exactly what his movie is.
Well, a film is like a battleground.
C'est comme une bataille, film.
Yes. Love.
L'amour.
Hate.
La haine.
Action.
L'action.
Violence.
La violence.
Death.
Et la mort.
In one word, emotions.
En un seul mot, c'est l'émotion.
Oh.
Ah. That's so great.
This is the party scene at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Where the color's changing colors. The filter, yeah. Yeah, the color. Yeah,
scene. There's a cake. So good.
Yeah, yeah. At the end, yeah.
Some fireworks. Yeah. Some
but yeah, the movie kind of follows Samuel Fuller's description of what a movie is.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes through love, hate, violence
in the first 10 minutes of the movie. You know?
And Godard was a big fan of Samuel Fuller.
Oh, huge fan. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah.
He was one of those like few American, you know, that they were trying to emulate a few, like him and Truffaut, where, you know, they started with Cahiers du Cinema or whatever.
Cinema,
yeah, and they, you know, they were critiquing all these American films and films throughout, and they like were just huge fans of like Hitchcock, and
Fuller,
Howard Hawks. Yeah.
Those were kind of the big three.
Like, they're the ones that were all about the like auteur driven, where they like start to see someone's vision and they're like, this is why this is great and this person is getting it right.
Yeah.
Well, and they shout out Johnny Guitar.
Literally in the first 2 minutes of the movie,
Truffaut's favorite.
She's like, oh, you let the maid go again. She's off to the cinema for the third time this week. And he's like, she's seen Johnny Guitar. It's good for her personal development.
Oh, man,
it's
that's
so
awesome.
Great, you know?
That's such a good liberal household argument. I
yeah. Right.
But, you know, it was just a great experience. And then, you know, you just really kind of reappreciate the fact that, you know, New York has these offerings, you know, kind of almost in every neighborhood. The Angelica also, you know, kind of in the West Village is amazing.
Metrograph.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of good
stuff. And not to mention like when MoMA or the Lincoln Center and those places like do retrospectives on their own. Like, they're just insane on beautiful, humongous screens.
Yeah. And the MoMA membership, if you have a membership there, you can see all the movies for
same
free.
Same thing with the Lincoln Center, yeah. It's like a, you know, whatever. I don't know what the monetary, you know, cost is, but it's like you just go to everything for free. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen up there, I remember Scorsese picked out 4 movies for the
month.
I saw The River on his recommendation there.
Yeah, I did that with Bogdanovich. Did like a guest hosting. I guess they do that. You know, that's kind of what you're talking about. Where they're just like, he picked out 4 movies or whatever. It's like, I'm freaking amazing.
It's a great spot. Unforgiven, I saw there.
Oh, wow.
Bridge of over River Kwai.
So yeah. David Lean.
Awesome. Well, I mean, we got it here too with NGA. With National Gallery.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
And if you get to... The cool thing also about New York, though, is like if you then when you head out to Brooklyn, you get a lot even...
No, that's what I mentioned earlier. Oh, okay. Like Nighthawk Cinema and Bam Rose and things like that are just amazing.
Spectacle Theater also. Yeah, for sure. Then there's Videology. Yeah. There's also... Someone was telling me about this place called Syndicated Bar Theater and Kitchen.
Bushwick.
In Bushwick.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All
right. It's fine.
I want to see pictures.
It's cool, but as all of those go...
Yeah.
Do you think...
You know, it has a good model. It seems to work well there.
I was kind of debating this the other night. I had a great kind of group of friends. we were out drinking and talking, you know, just about cinema in general and things like that. And just kind of... And they're all like either previous DC, mm-hmm. You know, transplants or you know, at least extremely familiar with DC. And the debate was like, could DC have two or three more art house cinemas spread around the city and would they survive? Oh. Would they do well? Because New York obviously can, LA can DC, you know? And I actually posed the question. That was kind of where I was coming from. Like, could, I was upset that the
so many
city I live in.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of
question.
But I mean, here's two owners of the art house cinema in DC. What do you feel like? Could there be one, you know, 40 blocks away from you somewhere and doing okay as well on Capitol Hill?
You want to go first?
Well, I mean, if we really want to talk about, I just had this really long talk with a friend of ours, Josh Gardner, came to town.
Right. Used to work at AFI.
He used to do the programming at AFI, and he was kind of the guy. Not kind of, he was the guy, the friend of a friend who sat me down and told me, like, this is how you do get rights.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, they want to know these three or four things. These are some contacts. And that was sort of the starting point. You know, Ryan and I were like, oh, let's do a movie theater. So that being said, we had these
essentially.
I get it.
We had this, you know, sort of long conversation about he's trying to open his own spot in Detroit that is somewhat similar to what we're doing.
Right.
And had a lot of like very practical questions and asked all the right questions actually, just based on the way that we operate and things that he was concerned, like how do you do this or how do you mm-hmm. do that, whatever, do you do an intermission or not? We debated intermission and like, but getting rights, we talked about sort of extensively about like getting rights for movies is really expensive. And mm-hmm. it's like some companies are really cool. Some companies are not. And mm-hmm. I think two things are happening at the same time. Like everything is getting more expensive in general, right?
Sure.
But also there are a lot, you know, smaller places that are trying to open up and like it's creating this sort of weird tension. We were just talking about how like it's just almost impossible to like make money off of movies now.
Yes.
Right.
So sure, could the city have another place like what we're doing?
See,
maybe. But I think more of the practical side of that of like, I mean, good luck. Like it's so expensive.
Well, and here's one thing is I think one thing we kind of realized is we thought pretty highly of our idea when we first came up with it. Like, oh, we're filling this big void. And the void one isn't as big as we had thought. Like there are a lot of cool places showing cool stuff. Maybe more so now for repertory stuff. Maybe E Street wasn't showing as much and is a bit more now, but honestly, there was stuff. There was stuff if you wanted it. There was West End.
Yeah,
at the
West
time.
End. Like West End does like
Wednesdays.
Wednesday classic film. And I go there a lot. It's right around
more
the corner
like
from my house.
Indie than arty.
For
but then
sure.
There's also like bars who do movie nights. There's a Czech place did some Czech director died like a week or two ago, and they showed a movie.
Oh.
At one of the Czech places, I was like, oh, that's a cool... I wasn't, like, getting huffy about it. Like, they're stealing our idea. I was like, no, it worked really well for
distribution
their...
Distribution cops.
For right. their... yeah, exactly. It worked well for the space they were.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the things that we're going to see, is, like, I do think the big megaplex, multiplex place model isn't going to run for very long. It's going to become fewer. It's going to become a very specific kind of movie.
I
should
say more specialized,
And that's going to become a very different thing, I think, in the next 10 years. So I do think maybe not 40 blocks away from us. Maybe I think there might end up being more models like ours, but it is a little difficult. So maybe you'll start still seeing movies, but in different environments.
Mm-hmm.
And at Eaton is starting to do films.
Yeah.
Sorry, line. Another new.
Yeah.
Like hip hotel. So there are places kind of incorporating it.
You can edit that out later.
Yeah, you can take that out.
It's really not a problem.
Well, I mean,
just start making it into a big one.
Security's on its way right now.
Yeah,
no. Whoa, Jack, can you tell these guys to calm down maybe? No, yeah. But I do think places are going to incorporate it, and there's just going to be a different way that people watch movies. Now, I do think there's going to be less places clearing the rights because it is expensive. It is a difficult model.
It is.
We have friends from Baltimore asking how to do it. Recently, someone who used to come to our theater in Bogota was asking for the brown paper tickets.
Yeah, my uncle in St. Louis is like, asked me to, you know, like investigate how you guys are doing that a little more and just like on his own.
I'm hopeful kind of, for that stuff. You know? Yeah. I think it's a, whether it's exactly how we do it or the way that other micro cinemas happen, right. I think it's a good model that places should hop on. Not in DC. Get back off. Yeah. No, just we had a guy from Brazil the other night, and he's like, you know, I used to see this in the 80s all the time. We called them cine clubs. Like, you had a little tiny room where you'd watch old movies. Mm-hmm. And he said that kind of, the model's kind of washed away, but it used to be a thing they'd do in Brazil, which sounded cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. No, I just you know, topic of conversation, like just because I had this experience, it just made me think, you know, is what New York and LA doing working also, because they can sustain it?
Yeah, I could. I would also say that New York and LA have much more of a film culture ingrained.
For sure.
Yes.
And so I don't know if it's, you know, which comes first, the theaters or the you know,
fair enough. Yeah,
you know, producing and making movies there.
Right.
I think it's just more like that was kind of what inspired me with doing Sons or like starting to project movies when Ryan and I lived in the same house. Was that I realized like a lot of our friends who are really smart and cool, very cultured about like music, and we all like understood weird and interesting music. But then when it came to movies, it was just like this sort of
emptiness. Yeah.
And then when I would go to New York, it was like everyone kind of just knew that was just a part of, you know, interest. So I wonder if that's part of it, where it's like it's just more part of the culture there.
Yeah.
Which was part of the goal here, or, you know, was to be a part of maybe changing that.
No, I think that is. I think you guys are doing that.
But also acknowledging that, like, there were things that have been here for a while. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think also DC is not as connected in some ways, even though it's smaller than New York. It's like I'll find out that there was some great shit that happened a week ago, and it's like, what? That was happening here? I didn't even know that was going on.
Yeah, I would say outside of my wife's company, yeah, there aren't a lot of places.
Yeah, but
that's what I mean. Like, if I don't hear about it through that, I'm like you. I find out about it 2 days late, you know, or sure. something like that. So there, maybe that... it's a bigger conversation for another day. You and I, you know, we've all talked about doing like just a big conversation on cinema in general and movie theaters.
Yeah, the argument we should, well, some at some point, like make a more focused conversation on what the hell are theaters? Are they good?
Yeah,
they
I get the. I don't want to put out the impression, and I'm afraid maybe we had a little bit just in some of these past conversations. You know, about talking about Spielberg and Netflix and MoviePass and all these things that kind of are working against each other. And we were kind of taking the side a lot of times of streaming and some of those options. Make no mistake, like there is nothing greater than sitting in a dark room, staring at a big screen, you mm-hmm. know, in the dark with, you know, 50 strangers, you know.
I went to a movie.
Yeah. We're talking about going to the movies. Tell us about your going to a movie.
I actually went to a movie, which is cool.
Yeah.
It dawned on me step by step.
Go through the whole process.
Yeah. So, well, I went to Atlantic Plumbing, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, you get assigned seating when you get your tickets ahead.
Right.
We had two seats in the far front left. Oh. Luckily, two people next to us did not show, so when the movie started, we scooted on over. Sorry, Atlantic Plumbing. What did I think? So, watched Us. Have you talked about that at all yet?
No, not yet. We're way down.
We waited. Okay. We waited for Pierre Lefou.
No spoilers, seriously.
Yeah, no spoilers.
I am going to see it this weekend.
But when the dude dies,
oh, I mean, come on. Which one?
Oh, great.
The only thing I want to say about that movie is two things. Jordan Peele is a genius, obviously. These are sort of redundant things. And I don't think that the Oscars can redeem themselves from last year, but a step in the right direction would be to give Lupita Nyong'o.
Nyong'o? Yeah.
Well, it would help if I, this point would have been stronger if I got her name right. If they would give her both the Academy Award for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress, I think that would be a step in the right direction.
Wow.
She's
that would be cool.
So amazing.
Yeah, she's great in it. Yeah.
If you're listening,
I don't think there's any spoiler to say like the movie involves like doppelgangers, right? Like
no, that. Yeah, that's fair.
That's kind of out there. I know that, and I have literally not read anything about this movie because I don't want to know anything before I go in.
The movie was great.
It's incredible, and it's on many levels,
and not for what I thought going into it. It was different than what I thought going into it, but it was just I'm going to rewatch it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to see it again.
Like you have to rewatch it,
and he wants you to, which is I've been watching some interviews, and later we can dissect this. But
sure,
yeah,
good. Back to the theater.
So, yeah, so the theater experience, I don't know, it just made me think about some things that we do. And sometimes, you know, I wonder, we just do these things, or I, you know, set up these things because I think they make sense because I'm there all the time, but I'm not comparing them to other experiences. Sure. Like adding the thing at the beginning that's like, please be courteous, etc. I realize now.
You know who
like,
does do that? Film Forum. Actually,
Film Forum does that.
Yeah,
cool.
I noticed the other two theaters, the IFC Theater and
Draft House, does that as well.
Village East didn't.
Yeah,
but Film Forum does do that.
Like, so granted, this is like a horror movie, and horror movies tend to like get people a little bit riled up. But I did find it annoying. Like there was a guy like during he's like hit him, you know, just like that kind of stuff. You know, like but over like sort of continuing to, and you're just like, all right, you know, like. And it made me realize, I think what that does when we put that before the thing is like it lets the people know who are like really
what
serious.
You're saying that just to clarify what you're saying, what you put up.
Yeah, we put up a thing before each screening.
Usually
like,
pretty funny, but
yeah, we've done different variations of things that ask people to be quiet and consider that they're not, you know, the only ones watching the movie.
Yeah.
Right. And I think like separating that.
And no performative laughter.
No performative laughter is the newer one that was very specific that seems to have. And now I see that.
Chuckle.
Yeah, it gets a chuckle, and I see how it works because it makes people think. Like, I wonder if that guy had seen that, if he would have been like, "Oh, maybe that is annoying."
Yeah.
Like, and he just maybe has never thought about that.
No, I had the experience at IFC. I was telling Ryan before the show where, you know, I'm sitting here watching one of my favorite films of all time and one of my favorite directors in Godard. And there was a guy like two rows behind me who had just like this guffaw kind of laugh. And it was so annoying. And you could maybe it was just his laugh and he couldn't help it and that's who he is, but there was certainly a feeling, and I'm generally pessimistic in this, so bear that in mind, but I felt like you're pointing at the jokes on the screen to let all of us around you know that you get this joke.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that you're smart.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it's a rainy Friday at 11 a.m. Everybody who's here has seen this movie and is here because they want to see this movie on the big screen. So we all get it.
Did you laugh in French?
Yeah, you should have. That made oh, ha, ha.
That's good.
Can we get that French chef from The Little Mermaid?
So I think just recognizing that and realizing like that it does create a certain atmosphere, which I imagine, you know, isolates us maybe from Well, no, maybe not that guy. That's a guy that's like a pretentious guy.
No, but I think if they had something up in front of that, maybe that does like at least draw him back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, makes him at least, like you said, I think it applies more to the people who are a little unconscious of the fact that they're going to be annoying. And it kind of brings that to the conscious level. Like, oh, I should keep my crap together a little bit more.
Yeah.
But it certainly doesn't hurt on any level.
And then the only other thing is like intermission, which, you know, we initially did as a way of like, you know, we need to offset costs
kind of
these
promote
movies
the bar
and you know, want people to drink. I now see that as a very valuable
thing.
Little break.
I was like, this movie is so good, but I had to pee so bad.
Right.
No, and no, also like wanted another drink. And I was like, man, this sucks. Like,
yeah. Like, yeah, for those uninitiated, Sons, for every film, does an intermission.
Almost every,
film.
Yeah, I mean, 99 point, yeah.
Maybe not if it's a 78-minute movie,
I think,
or something.
Yeah, 70 is usually around where I
draw
the line. Also, it dawned on me that like I'm spoiled, and like I, like if I'm behind the bar during a screen, it's like I can pour myself a drink.
Yeah.
Right.
While
right.
I watch any movie.
Yeah, which is, or you can just pause it whenever you want.
Just pause it, yeah. Exactly. Hold on, guys. Gotta go to the bathroom.
One thing I always like about Atlantic Plumbing, and it's a little odd because I don't see this at most theaters. I usually go on like a Monday during the day.
Yeah.
It's chill when I go there. So right when you walk in, they like show you to the theater, and they kind of tell you real quick, like, oh, if you want anything, it's at the bar. You get food or drinks, you know, and kind of tell you where your seat is,
sure.
blah, 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 and you go in. But because I was going on like a busy night and Us was sold out when I went, you know, she comes up and makes an announcement, like, and kind of does what she would have done with each person individually, but just like a quick chat, like, hey, everyone, there's food and drinks at the bar. It was kind of, it answered some of the questions you might have.
Sure.
So you didn't feel awkward or try to not answer them or not do it. It was,
well, and it, you know, ideally, you know, you're saving kind of some angst on the rest of the people who do know where uh-huh. everything is for that person who didn't know is
yep.
now getting up, moving around, you know, whatever awkwardness can
also
happen.
If you've ever been to Sons, we don't do like cocktails before or during screenings, during because it's shaking and stirring and uh-huh. it's loud during the screening, and before because it's usually it's not worth it for us to have multiple people working, but it gets a little busy for about 30 minutes,
right.
You know, right before the movie, which is challenging for one person.
If you're mixing cocktails.
Yeah, even if you're not, it can be a little hectic because uh-huh. you're checking people in,
for
getting
sure.
popcorn, drinks, etc. So I did notice that they had like, you know, special cocktails for the movie, plus their huge cocktail list. And they had just like one dude who's just like drowning at like, you know, the
sure.
movie was at 7:40 and this was at like 7:15, and it was just like a sea of people just kind of like standing
one
around
at a time,
you know.
Yeah.
And that made me think, okay, yeah, this wouldn't
good,
actually
do
yeah
yeah.
yeah,
this is exactly, I was just like watching, I was like, this is exactly how I think it would go, like,
yeah,
except for maybe worse because I'd be like freaking out. Yeah. And that was just as a bartender. That's
yeah,
like,
he's
not doing tickets and other
sure.
stuff, so, and that was even yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they normally have more than one person on, or I don't know, but it was.
I feel like I've been there on Friday and Saturday nights, and there's one bartender. And every time it's a wait for your drink. It's a,
yeah.
you know, you got to plan ahead.
Yeah.
Does Film Forum or any of the other, did any of the New York ones that you went to serve alcohol? Did you notice it?
I didn't notice. I don't, but now that I'm thinking about it, I think the answer is no on
okay.
Film Forum, IFC, or East Village.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember seeing drinks at any of those.
Yeah,
but
I could be mistaken, and if you're out there and you know better, obviously, you know, let us know. But
tell us what you drink.
Yeah, tell us what you had.
No, I wonder if it's you know, bookstores, what kept them around for a while was adding a cafe.
Right.
That was like a thing for the last 15 years of
sure.
large bookstores kind of probably losing money on the space. They started, everyone had a cafe. And I wonder if that's happening with bars, because I know AFI, E Street, Atlantic Plumbing, Sons, Angelica, do they have drinks?
Yeah, they have drinks.
Yeah,
yeah.
Angelica
see,
does,
everywhere,
yeah.
even, yeah, a lot of places have drinks.
Yeah. I think Bam Rose and Nighthawk both have drinks.
Yeah,
well.
Oh, definitely some of the, and Metrograph has drinks.
Metrograph,
so I know
yeah.
some of them. So that's becoming like a new model, too.
Yeah.
Which,
and if you can do it,
makes
great.
Sense, yeah, on all the for all the reasons.
Yeah, I think especially for a small theater. You
yeah,
know.
It makes sense for all the reasons except for prohibiting performative laughter.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, it changes the experience, which is fine for me. I think it's pretty enjoyable. Like, I used to love going to Arlington Draft House when
oh,
that was the only
sure.
one
yeah,
I knew
yeah.
around.
It was the only
that.
One that did it for a long time. Yeah, in the early 2000s, that was it.
It
yeah.
does make challenging, like, noticing, you know, like if you're running a bar or whatever, you're bartending and you can watch people and you can see, oh, I can see maybe they're probably done, like I don't need to, they're getting, in a dark movie.
Yeah.
Right, right.
You see him before, and then you see him after, and you're like, damn.
That hit you hard.
You've been through a lot.
Okay, so been through a lot. Let's go. Let's just talk about some of the ones we did at Sun's over the weekend. We did Ravenous.
Oh, yeah. That's a fun movie.
So good.
It's so fun, right?
I haven't seen it. I need to now.
Oh, it's so fun.
It's, yeah. Like, the soundtrack's really cool. It's just funny and dark and, like, suspenseful in a not over-the-top way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was totally one of those movies. Like, I didn't really know what I was getting in for when I saw it and, like, really enjoyed what came out of it.
Well, yeah, shockingly good, but also, like, under... I didn't really know much about it, to be honest. I don't remember it coming out or...
But the people who were there were like already fans.
Everyone has a following. Yeah,
I was downstairs, so I just got the intermission, and everyone waiting for drinks or the bathroom was just saying, "Man, that bone popping out of his arm!" Like, so I was like, "Okay." Yeah. But then at the end, everybody came up and was just like, "It's really good."
Yeah,
yeah.
Which you don't hear this too.
Yeah, yeah.
It really kind of like, it's one of those movies that really like walks a line where if it were a hair to the left or right, it would be maybe a little too campy.
Sure.
Or become campy, I guess. Yeah. Not too campy. It would become campy. And a little bit the other way, like it would almost be too dark. You know?
Or
and
taking
like
itself too seriously.
Yeah, and I guess maybe that's a better way to put it. But yeah, it really walks that line really well and just kind of becomes a fun movie.
Yeah.
Gotta see it.
We did this movie I Am Not a Witch on Friday. I did not see it, but there were people that were sad at the end, and I saw the end. We'll just leave it at that. It was gorgeous. I wasn't able to actually watch that one. Sunday night we did this movie called Ratcatcher, Lynn Ramsey early film, and that was a fun experience.
Real romp.
So that was a fun experience because I was asking people beforehand, subs or no subs, because it's in Glasgow, right? And it's like super heavy accents.
Oh, crazy.
And this guy who's kind of annoying came up at the very beginning and was like, he's like, "Can you put the subtitles on?" And like kind of like demand. He's like, "I know it's on there." And I was like,
"Oh."
And I just kind of was like, "Meh."
Yeah.
Exactly. So I had asked a bunch of people beforehand and they were like, "Oh, let's give it a shot, you know?" And then then at intermission, sort of did a reevaluation. Everyone was like, "Yeah,
please."
And I was like,
"I spent
day,
like
man.
6 weeks in Edinburgh and a week and
without
a half
subs.
In
without subs,
yeah, walking around without subtitles, and it's tough in some areas."
I really wish when he had started barking at me that I would have been like, "I'm sorry, I can't understand. No subtitles."
Right.
But it was interesting to watch. I mean, it was such a good movie either way. You definitely miss some nuance, but it's a movie that you could also, I think, watch silently and have, you know, get the basic gist of it and be very enthralled by it. There's one scene where the main dad, like, saves a kid's life, and the kid later is thanking the man, and he says, "Thanks for saving my wife. I mean, my life." None of us would have, and that was really funny with the subs, none of us would have seen that. None of us would have gotten that at all. We would have just been like, "Did he say thanks for saving my life at all?" Like, we wouldn't have even known. So there were some.
But a good weekend.
Yeah.
Good weekend.
Should we just, weekend, guys. Yeah. You get to hear us talk about going to the movies.
Right. Now, next week, we'll talk about the new month of
April.
Fun stuff, April Fools.
It'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
Well,
all right.
We're hoping.
Stick around.
Au revoir.
Yeah, listen to whatever the next thing is on Full Service Radio.
Hey, 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 how are my best girlfriends?
My name is George. This is Katie.
Hello, sweetheart.
Hi.
Welcome to our home.